She is the chair of the APEC Business Advisory Council. Rachel Tolele is a strong advocate for the unrestricted trade of vaccines and essential medical supplies, as barriers around the import and export of vaccines has been a key issue preventing widespread immunisation in developing countries. She's also the CEO of Māori-owned food and beverage company Kono. And Rachel also says it's not a time for business as usual and that the pandemic must remain the highest priority. Rachel Tolele joins the program now. E te hoa, Rachel, tēnā koe.
Morene, e hoa.
You are the chair of the APEC Business Advisory Council. What is the role of the chair of the APEC Business Advisory Council?
Well, the APEC Business Advisory Council is the business voice into APEC, and we have three private sector individuals from each one of the 21 APEC economies who are appointed by the leader of that economy. And it's my job as chair to really manage the council for the duration of this year, to guide the work program that we have ahead of us and ensure that we get to the end of this year with some really good deliverables and some good advice and some good influence, if you will, with the leaders of each economy.
I suspect when you took the role, you weren't anticipating having to do everything virtually. What is that like?
I wasn't, although to be fair, I think it's actually worked out quite well in that we were unsurprisingly ambitious this year with what we wanted to introduce by way of idea and conversation to ABAC, and putting our entire meeting, if you will, online this year has allowed us to interact more often than we would have. Ordinarily, we meet four times a year in person in one or other of the economies, ending up with the host economy. But this year, we have five working groups, 16 task forces, and we have every single week just a plethora of moments for engagement amongst ourselves and then increasingly through with the ministers. So we've actually been able to double down on those communications, albeit I will say that not meeting face-to-face certainly is starting to, you're starting to feel that slight restriction of not having the kanohi ki te kanohi ability to interact.
And just have some off-the-side conversations or some small mini bilaterals, right, which are sometimes necessary or sometimes really good to be able to have just when you've got a breakout session.
I think so. Those water cooler chats are over coffee, and there's a huge amount that goes on behind the scenes with our team of staff, as they're known, who are finessing, you know, down to the very individual words and the influence and advice that we're giving through into reports and letters to ministers. You know, those are the teams who are working behind the scenes. So not only can they not do that in person, we do find ourselves meeting at very unusual hours of the day and night.
You have stressed the need for open and unrestricted trade to combat the worst in COVID-19. What has been the response and the discussions, the nature of the discussions from members of APEC to that?
In the business community, you know, we recognise that we're all in this together. So every economy needs medical supplies and vaccines, but not every economy makes them. So trade is a key to solving this. And we urge APEC ministers to take the lead internationally to reject export restrictions and trade barriers on the essential tools. And it was really positive to see in our meeting last week that we're broadly on the same page with APEC members when it comes to working together to overcome the pandemic and acknowledging the important role that trade has to play. But In the meeting last week with the ministers responsible for trade, they probably didn't go quite as far as we in the business community would have wanted them to in terms of making concrete commitments. We would have loved to see an explicit rejection of vaccine nationalism and complete free trade in essential medical supplies. We didn't get that, and that's disappointing, although there were lots of positive words about the general direction, and that's the nature of consensus, which is what ABAC and APEC is. But what I would say is that now we need to see countries really putting their money where their mouth is. So it can't be great sentiment, it can't be nice words. We actually need to see economies working together to ensure that everyone has access to vaccination and medical essentials. That it's, I guess, the key to solving the health challenge, but also getting borders open again and restarting the dynamic growth that our region and APEC is really famous for.
So that's the part that I was going to ask. Is it because of the current COVID situation where borders are restricted that people aren't as open to showing that commitment, or is it just because this is the way that it's always been in terms of having tariffs or trade barriers that has stifled or limited the ability to be more committed to it?
I think that when you face down a pandemic or when you face down a global crisis as we have done, your behaviours may not be what they have always been. And I think I understand and I appreciate the urge to look internally. I understand that need to protect one's own peoples. So that then gives rise to protectionism, and then by association that sort of vaccine nationalism that we're seeing. So I understand the sentiment, but I think that it's incumbent on those of us who have the ability to or have the ability to influence, to think about how do we resist the urge to do that, because that just really slows everyone's ability to recover.
Is there some irony for some countries at New Zealand's position, and you as chair representing New Zealand, obviously, as the host, to want to push that agenda, given, obviously, we are one of the most lockdown countries, we are one of the most protected borders for a country in the world? Was that raised? Were people discussing that?
No, I think New Zealand generally, we're really seen as the good, honest broker in all of these conversations. I think that people appreciate why various economies have responded in the ways that they have. And equally, as I say, the health crisis is only one part of the equation. And I think that we have been fairly forthright in ideas of returning to open borders when it's safe to do so, the emphasis being on safe, but getting back into that interactive trade movement about the world. But we need to do that collectively. We need to do that with a shared understanding of what safe, seamless reopening of borders might look like.
So as you say, there were some good words, not necessarily the commitment that you and indeed Aotearoa was looking for. So what commitments have been made?
The APEC members, you know, they've widely acknowledged that export restrictions need to be minimal and temporary, and they've agreed to look at border measures like tariffs and see if we can reduce or eliminate them. There were some really practical commitments about accelerating the use of digital tools and working closely together on things like faster and more digitised customs administration processes, about freeing up services that support trade and sharing information on ideas for border reopening. And the latter point actually is really crucial to revitalising trade. It's something that New Zealand businesses only know only too well, both in terms of getting workers here and going offshore to support relationships with our customers in overseas markets. So there were commitments made. Again, I go back to that idea that we are a consensus group and we need to make sure that we do act in that way. There are avenues for where people act outside of those forums, but in terms of the conversations, there certainly are positive and actual commitments being made in that space.
So you talked about revitalising trade being a big part here, or being the big issue or the big ticket item. How do you do that? What's a mechanism that can help achieve that potentially in the short term to get to the wider aspiration and greater commitment that you're looking for?
There's a number. They really don't exist in isolation. And I was reading yesterday about a concept around, you know, a bullwhip theory. So, you know, one small part of, for instance, global supply chains vastly overstating the impact of one small part of the equation breaking down, but showing that every part of our supply chain is interconnected. And in this instance, it was a slowing up of containers and so forth. But, you know, with regards to what we can do in this space, there are a number of areas that we can work into to bring economic recovery and trade and prosperity. So in ABAC this year, our theme, New Zealand's theme that we've chosen in ABAC, is Tangata Taiao Me Te Taurikura. So people, place and prosperity. And that's the lens we're looking at everything through. People are at the heart of the agenda, and we're really conscious that, as we say in Kono and Waka too, we need to be good ancestors. We need to love our land, and our communities are critical in that. So, you know, we really strongly believe that people and the work that we do in the space underpins the living standards and opportunities that we enjoy in the region. And we had a dialogue with ABAC members and the APEC trade ministers last Friday night. It kicked off at 11 p.m. and went through to 1 a.m, which was fantastic. You know, and those sorts of conversations are a chance for ABAC and the business community to really underscore key messages with key decision makers on trade in the region. So there's health, but health is part of it. Reopening borders is part of it. Giving small, medium and underrepresented groups access to infrastructure and digital services, that's a part of it. Ensuring that we can turn our minds to climate change, that's a part of it. So it's what I would call a kaleidoscope of priorities, and in any given year, some will rise to the top ahead of others.
You've used the phrase good ancestors before in an interview that you and I did, I think, a couple of years ago now. It might have been last year. That type of terminology would appeal to nations like Asian nations, Pacific nations. So are there nations that have taken that on and have been a part of the conversation using those kinds of terms about being good ancestors? Is it now become much more acceptable in the way that people are doing trade to act in that way internationally?
I wouldn't want to be so naive as to say, yes, everyone is forward-thinking the way we do, and it's within, say, our Māori hardwiring, where we might look forward generation to generation to generation. I don't know that is the case, to be fair. It is something that I would love to see. I'd love for us to consider that we're here for a moment in time, and it's our responsibility to behave well and to ensure that we allow for a prosperous future for our grandchildren and their grandchildren and beyond. I think that the pandemic has put us in a place where we have to respond to the most immediate threats. Mm-hmm. And I think that we do certainly, though, while we are doing that, and the COVID-19 and the pandemic certainly is the context for every recommendation we are making to leaders, but we're also trying to look beyond that. So what does building back better look like? What does our new normal, if you will, look like, and how do we contribute to that? Because that's beyond COVID.
So let's talk about the building back better part. What does that look like for you, in your view?
Building back better. It's the building part is pretty tough, to be honest. But look, it probably looks like keeping markets open. It looks like keeping trade flowing, working together for the safe reopening of borders, digital tools being leveraged for all of this. That's the baseline, but it's not enough. And I think the better part is the most important part of your question. COVID has really threatened the setback for economic inclusion for a wide range of vulnerable groups. So women, Indigenous communities and small businesses quite specifically. And I think, among other things, we need to take active steps to help those groups regain a firm footing. And that's about reducing barriers, providing access to education and skills, helping them to access tools and opportunities, and keeping their needs at the forefront of policymakers' minds as they pull the economic levers over the next few years. And, you know, I think, you know, in our communities, we know that what is good for Māori, as an example, is good for the entire country. And that is true of every Indigenous economy in the APEC region, and there are around 270 million Indigenous peoples in our region whose needs thus far haven't really made the agenda, and it is something that we're wholly committed to in this year of hosting.
There's a phrase that we use sometimes, which is that when big nations have economic incidents and travesties and impacts of things like COVID, then those groups like women and Indigenous peoples, they don't get the cold, they actually get really, really sick. So to help, I guess, inform that a little bit more, what do you know is the impact, the total impact of the economic cost of COVID-19 so far?
I think that there is the immediate economic the immediate impact, economic effect that has been felt by people. I think that you have seen people out of work. I think that you have seen people separated from what they know to be their way of life. And I equally have done some interesting reading about separation societies and when people are hit, you know, very firmly by events of this nature, and it tends to separate people from what they know, who they love, their place. It turns you into, it can turn you into economies or places that really double down on using their natural resources and sucking the living daylights out of them just to keep economies going. So yeah. I think all of those things can be said to have happened, and yes, there are the effects that in terms of downturn of economies, global growth is projected at around 6% for 2021, moderating to around 4.4% in 2022. Those are actually probably better than I thought people think we might have found ourselves in. Emerging Asian economies are going to grow by about 8.6% this year. So there have been categorically economic effects that have been felt, but also, not to be glib, there is an upswing as well. So there's some really rapid digitalisation. Do you like that word? I just threw that at you, but not even correctly. Digitalisation across the region. And I've seen a study out of McKinsey that says that we've leapt a decade in terms of digital transformation of business and consumption trends. So that helps turbocharge recovery. And we didn't have that, for instance, in the GFC. So, you know, I think that we're probably going to look around 3% lower in terms of world output in the coming years than we'd expected before COVID arrives. But there is an upside.
So that 3% that you've talked about, you've also talked about the fact that boldness is required to transform the worst of times here. What does that look like, the boldness that is required in your view?
I think a lot of this comes down to trust. I think economies have to trust each other to behave in ways that we know to be good, that we know to be constructive, that we know require collective efforts, and to go all the way back to the likes of vaccine nationalism. No one is safe in this space unless everyone is safe. And I know that's been said in a number of places by a number of people, but it is in fact true. The pandemic, it's very hard to see beyond that, and the sorts of economic figures that have been put into the world are really based largely on, say, a recovery in and around 2022, 2023. But that assumes that everyone is safe. And one school of thought...
And equal access to resource and equal opportunity and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that requires a huge amount of trust. People have to let go of the reins a little bit. They have to share in what they have so we can all get to that place collectively, because it matters little to nothing if one economy is ripping along in a safe state of affairs and the one next to them is not, because you can take that old adage around bigger thy neighbour and it will become sick in thy neighbour.
So what impact then of non-APEC countries do they have on this situation? Because, you know, there's some interesting things happening outside of the APEC nations, you know, particularly when you look at the likes of UK and everything else that's happening with the EU and that kind of stuff. Is there a need to strengthen the agenda within the APEC nations and then front foot that with others to be a part of that global game that's required in your mind?
Well, this would be a personal position because I'm very, very far down the food chain, but philosophically, of course, and I think there are a number of other forums that New Zealand finds themselves in and finds themselves at the forefront of in terms of that honest broker role to have those conversations. And I think when you see the entire world being the subject of one event at one time, it really sharpens the senses as to how best we can act. And it's not as individuals, it is as collectives. So certainly we're grouped now as APEC, but that's just 21 economies and a myriad of others. So how do we take the learnings that we can have as a collective group of economies here and apply those to those others who might not be part of that conversation? Because there will be learnings there to our, and I think quite keenly about how we do extend that, the benefit of those conversations to our Pacific whānau.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that I sense from you is that the ground is fertile for those bold initiatives that we talked about before, or the boldness that is required to occur, particularly within the APEC nations, right? There seems to be not only the good words that are happening, but also the general sense that there might be the opportunity for that to occur in time.
Yeah, I do. I do think that's the case.
What has been the impact, particularly on a business like Cornwall, which is a food exporter? It is a high-quality food producer. It has exported largely to a number of other nations across the world. What's been the impact on Cornwall itself, Rachel?
So, of COVID?
Yeah.
So initially, I would say our experience last year was, whilst incredibly difficult because, you know, in one breath we were saying stay home or, you know, essentially die, or certainly, you know, in that realm. In the same breath, I was calling my team of 400 or 500 and saying, but if you guys could just go to work, that'd be great, because we're an essential business and we're a food creator, so we were required, or at least given the great privilege of doing that. And so very scary to start with, but then our team were phenomenal. They absolutely nailed it. They came together in a way that I don't think I ever could have asked of them under other circumstances, and they kept on working and in ways that looked after themselves and others. So that was a brilliant upside. We what we thought came out of that in a strong position, but I think really from a trade standpoint, we're feeling it now more than we did and at the end of last year. So markets continue to open and close. Supply chains are incredibly difficult for our primary industry. You know, we export hard goods, and so we have an issue in and around getting our containers onto ships and around the world. And I know that's affecting most every company in our industry. We have the labour issues, which are challenging. So I think we're stepping through a new phase or a new chapter of COVID, and I see that playing out over the next 12 to 36 months, to be honest, where you are trying to get all four wheels back on the track with your partners and your product movements. What it does as a country, I think, is make us look very carefully about what we base our economy on. And at the moment, you know, tourism, very, very difficult. The primary industry, very difficult, albeit that some of our returns are up, ironically. We just need to get the product on the boats. But then I think it forces us to think, how do we move into a more digital environment? How do we embrace technology in a way that it lets us move products, services and so forth around the world in a more digital fashion, in a potentially higher returning way?
And as you say, some of your returns are up, right? Which is interesting.
Some are. Look, I will tell you what, people in COVID have really lent into their wine consumption, which is a thing. I think it comes from the fact that people are not being able to go out and eat in restaurants, so they are treating themselves when they're at home, and that's a good thing from my standpoint. But again, it's getting that product to the world, getting it on the ships and getting it moving. We have this perfect storm of people not being able to travel, so spending more on their own consumption, so they're demanding more, so more product needs to be out moving around the world. We have containers in the wrong parts of the world. The Suez Canal did not help, and so it's a bit of a... It's a game of Tetris is the way I like to think about it. So bits are falling into place slowly, but it is slowly.
Someone's just made a comment here in our feedback. Brilliant corridor with Rachel Tolele. So fortunate in Aotearoa to have business leadership like hers. This person is Robert Oliver, actually, is keen to know your thoughts on Bill Gates' refusal to release vaccine patents for COVID. Was that discussed?
We haven't discussed it, but what I think he's asking about, Julian, is the debate going on around in the WTO about waiving intellectual property rights exactly on vaccines. Yeah. And getting that sorted could certainly help, although there are some very sort of arcane nuances that the trade experts are debating about how that could be done. And it was certainly welcome to see the US give their support for the idea, but it's not a silver bullet. I know it's the US as in the economy as against Bill Gates the person, but not a silver bullet. I think that making those kinds of vaccine requires incredibly sophisticated manufacturing processes and supply chains, and it's not just a matter of getting rid of the IP rules. We also need the technology, the inputs, the investment and the skills. So again, to that idea that it's a push on many fronts. So support the ramping up of existing production, allowing new manufacturers to start producing, most likely with some technical help. I think we could liberalise the trade and all the inputs and services that the supply chain needs. And also, I think for those wealthier countries to gift vaccines to the more vulnerable. And we've started to see that happen, although, again, from a business standpoint, we're quite jumpy, we're quite ambitious, we want things to go as quick as we do in business. So that would be great to have that happen more quickly.
Rachel, thank you so much for your time. I mean, I know you're doing a number of things, including actually getting some of Aotearoa's best and brightest to a reunion that's happening on the 26th of June. So I'll leave you to coordinate that.
Thank you very much. I've got a lot of able help in that, Julian, so I appreciate your support there.
Thank you again for your time and all the very best. Ngā mihi nui kia koe hoa.
Kia ora.
Kia ora maira. That was Rachel Tolele. She is the chair of the APEC Business Advisory Council and, of course, New Zealand hosted APEC in 2021.